August 18, 2021, it's the Watt Pedro Show.
Thank you. open your eyes. Before you open your mouth, stick out your tongue and let me look inside. I want to find what's down your throat. Open your heart, so open up your mind.
Pedro Show, happy Wednesday. Started off John Coltrane. Time Was. I think this was a prestige record. Maybe his first time as a band leader, 1957. Say Something after that from Imogene Thackeray. And those Estonian software engineers with their Skype inventions made it possible for me to have Imogene Thackeray via Skype. Welcome aboard, Imogene.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me. Yeah, pleasure.
And what town are you talking to me from?
It is 7 o'clock, yeah, here in London.
Oh, in where, London. I asked you the town. I know the time, you're 8 hours ahead of Pedro.
Yeah, it's bedtime here. Ready for bed.
Yeah, I conk around 8 too. I pop at about 3 a.m. I conk early, especially during this situation. I want to learn about your journey through music, please, Imogene. Tell me, or because it's the Walk for Pedro show, so there's no hard questions, no wrong answers, but try to bring your earliest musical recollection that you can.
The earliest I can really remember is my parents playing the stuff that they loved. So for my mum, that was like 80s soul, those kind of like disco tunes. For my dad, that was a lot of pop rock. So things like Queen and, you know, stuff with really big tunes, a big melody to lean on.
Now, when you say play, you mean play the records, or did they play instruments?
They just played the records. No one in my family is musical.
Okay, so this house...
I was the first one.
Did you grow up in London?
No, I grew up in Yorkshire, which is in the north of England.
Yeah, well...
Yeah.
Like Leeds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I used to play a club, Duchess of York, in that town. And then after that, there was stuff. There's a river east. And so Salisbury Bridge, Hebron Bridge, these working man clubs just west of Halifax. So I know the area a little bit. Also, Helper Manfred Stooges, Mr. Josh Grain, was from that area. So I can even kind of tell the talk. Actually, they said those bridge towns, they're only 5 miles apart, but they can tell each other's accents.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the UK is so small and everything's so concentrated that, you know, a couple of miles over, someone will have a different word for bread or something. It's like, and that really, that sort of makes people stand out. Like, oh, you're not from around here, are you?
Yeah, right. But that can also be a neat thing. Wow, you're a foreigner. Stranger. Hey, maybe I can learn some. Now, this pad, so there was just listening devices, nothing to make music with, no instruments in Yorkshire.
Not until I started playing the cornet when I was 8.
And was this in school?
Yeah, so my school had a really good music program, and I just sort of had some natural aptitude, and my friend had a cornet, and it just looked shiny and loud, and I just had that really childish connection to it. I just thought, yeah, I can make a lot of noise with this. But it turned out I was good at it. So
it's a little calmer than the trumpet.
Yeah, it's a bit darker, smaller, it's got a warmer sound.
That's a good word for it. Yeah, I think it's got more tubing, maybe. And so let's go back to your thing at home. The first record you bought with your own money, please,
was Freddie Mercury, Living on My Own.
So your pop had an influence on you.
I guess so, but I think it was also just recognizing the name. Like, I knew about him from my dad listening to Queen, and I just sort of recognized the name.
A great
and I
went singer, to, man. Great singer, man. What a voice.
Really great. God. And the Living on My Own was so different from the Queen stuff that it kind of took me by surprise, but I just, you know, I loved him. I loved his personality.
He could sing anything, I think. You know what I mean? You could have gave him anything and he could have sang it. That man was remarkable. What about the first gig you went and saw?
Other than sort of small school kind of things, I think the first sort of big gig might have been some terrible pop band, actually. like a sort of stadium tour thing, but, you know, not with decent music, with some kind of like plasticky kind of synth pop, but people that can't sing but look beautiful. I think it was one of those kind of things.
Maybe it was chosen for you and it wasn't even your choice.
It definitely was my auntie, who isn't very much older than me. I want to take you. She loved it. Yeah, she sort of fancied the boy band and was like, "Come on, I want to take you to this. I'm old enough to go out on my own now." So
Mike George,
I'll take you with me.
Mike George or Scissor Sisters or Spice Girls or something. But anyway,
I think it was Westlife actually. Who were like
Irish
boy band.
Didn't last long.
Unfortunately, nothing cool. It was Westlife.
It didn't last long. They're very handsome, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. That's the moneymaker, the face.
I hope they're doing okay nowadays. Because they usually have tough challenges when they grow up because of that situation. Let's go back to you and the cornet. Now, you learned how to read music, right, to be in the band.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's like to not be able to read it. Yeah.
Wow,
It looks like reading English to me.
Okay, so did you take it further? Did you branch off to other instruments?
Yeah, but I play quite a few instruments.
I know nowadays, but how did you develop?
Oh, back then.
Cornet, right, and this other stuff. That was the gateway drug, right?
Yeah. not till I was a teenager, that was when I started picking up other things.
And what was the next one?
Drums and guitar, about the same sort of time.
Okay, guitar. Acoustic or electric?
Yeah. Either. It was just whatever I could get my hands on. I remember being able to play, like, the first time I held it, which was very strange.
Oh, so you didn't even own one? You were using friends or something?
At first, yeah, and I remember just sort of having seen it on, you know, MTV and all that sort of stuff and heard music. I just I was like, oh, so you put your hand here and you play that, and then, okay, and this is a chord. I've seen people do that.
Well, look, they're both instruments, right? They're both ways of making music, but one is like for the breath and all that. And the other one's putting your fingers in the right place and hitting a string. Could you relate stuff from cornet over to guitar?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, the cornet was just what I was playing. I think I wasn't even then seeing myself as a cornet player. I was just like, okay, I'm a young musician, and this is what I play. And it all comes from the same place. And I think
If I came from Mars, I would say, yeah, they're instruments, but I think one is a little more monophonic than the other.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, of course there's differences, but searching for melodies, that's what I was doing.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, of course. And you know, you can play monophonic lines on the guitar, no problem. In fact, Tom Verlaine he don't even use the other strings. He'll play the whole solo on one fucking string. Like it was a trombone kind of thing. You gave me this tune, Mercury, I want to play.
Oh, yeah.
communities are bound by words, by listening, by lending an ear, a shoulder, an hour. To listen is to know, and to know is to love. To listen is to know, and to know is to love. To listen is to know, and to know is to love. It's to listen is to know, it's to love. To listen is to know, and to know is to love. It's to love. It's to love.
Thank you.
topic.
Pedro Shy Chuck music started off with Imogene Thackeray with Mercury. Probably nothing to do with Freddie. He was from Zanzibar, too. I don't think that was his real showbiz name, huh? Bronze Age UFO after that from Baltimore with part B4 of their volume 2 of the Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask piece. I think it was a cassette and they chopped it up into a bunch of pieces. I've been playing it last episode. Variet after that with Remaining Somewhat Myself. Ray Shin. This is Larry Boast Buddy. Mavericks Game. Louis Fong. Yeah, she's plays something called the pipa. It's this, maybe a Chinese lute, you call it, maybe? Maybe it was first, though, so maybe the lute is the Chinese, European pipa. Yeah, who knows? Sai Shang Ku was named the tune, and then Dime Git Mong. Sorry for destroying Asian languages. Actually, I destroy all languages, not on purpose, but fuck. It's an accident, people. Because I have a lot of respect for you guys. It's tough. Orang Kap Dui Collective out of Vietnam. And then finally, Imogene Thackeray with About That. So, okay, so you go on to the guitar, your buddy's guitars, and start spreading out your music experience. Not after school, like graduating, but after school in the afternoon. Do you get into the bedroom band, the garage band, the basement band kind of thing with your buddies?
There was a bit of that, but it was mainly doing sort of like orchestras and stuff like that. Every single night of the week, I had something. And on weekends, I'd have at least two a day.
Wow, now orchestra, you'd be like the school stuff, right?
Not just that, like the Yorkshire orchestras and wind orchestras.
Oh, okay. So you took your cornet outside of school and brought it to other trips.
Yeah, and I was doing brass band music and stuff, and I started playing the trumpet alongside that when I was about 14.
Oh, so, wow, okay.
Which is a bit more versatile than the cornet. Cornet is a bit sort of, yeah, it's quite limited in its usage, really.
What's the other one, flugelhorn?
Yeah, a bit of flugel as well, yeah.
That's kind of close in there, too. It's more roundy like the cornet, right?
Yeah, so fluffy and, yes, gorgeous.
Yeah, what's kind of ignorant, so help me. okay, so these are like kind of fucking, these aren't little kid bands. These are like adults, right?
Yeah, I definitely had a lot of that growing up where, like, I would be made, like, you know, principal trumpet or whatever, and there's this 40-year-old woman on the second chair just sort of looking at me and being like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, it's like, well, I was a bit cocky. I was like, I'm good. I'm gonna, you know, you'll see me one day on the stage. I'm gonna do this for a job. And people were just, even them, like, yeah, sure.
But this was all you. This is Emma Jean. This isn't your parents. Like, you know, Mozart's daddy, right, was whoring him out, right, at 5 years old, like a little toy or something. This is all your. This is all your prerogative, right?
All me, yeah. If anything, I think my parents would have loved me to have quit because they had to draw me around.
No Disney like, showbiz mosh shit here, okay.
I know. I'd like, you know, practicing on an evening, they'd be like, will you shut the fuck up because we're trying to watch TV.
oh, yeah, because the prac, right? Okay. Yeah, it's kind of hard to be quiet unless you do Miles Davis with a mute style. Did you ever play with a mute?
Yeah, of course. I went through a phase of using a wah pedal as well and wearing a cape.
Wearing a cape. Of course. Cape, very important. Ask Mr. Cecil Tyler about that. So, was there a part of your music thing that did get in with people your own age, like doing garage, basement, bedroom bands?
A little bit. I remember jamming out a little bit of kind of like prog with some friends at school who were into Dream Theater.
Oh, okay. Dream Theater, like that prog band from Texas?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I obviously was not good enough at the guitar to play those lines, but people would do it a little bit.
No.
And then we started playing easy stuff like some soul.
You could have padded the choruses with some horn stabs or something. But, yeah, okay, funk, right? The horny horns with George Clinton and Jim Brown, right? Maceo and... Yeah, what about Reeds? Did they ever attract you?
Not really.
It's a
I
whole
think...
other thing, right? It's a whole other... It's the breath, yeah. But a whole other world, yeah.
It's like an embouchure clash as well. Like,
right,
if you
right.
play... something with the mouth and you're sort of turning those muscles and you go to something else, it's they don't really line up properly.
Absolutely,
so it's kind of
absolutely.
Like you stick to a family, yeah.
Sure, I even heard between clarinet and sax they try to keep it because there's some guys got holes and some don't, they have pads. Like I said, watch Slow Learner. What about Woman Alone, recording yourself? Did you get a 4-track or some shit like that?
At what age, sorry?
You know, this is like, you know, you're still in school shit.
No, I mean, I definitely wrote songs.
There's a dilemma, right? I've had people on the show, we've talked about this, classically trained musicians, unless you put music in front of them, 90% can't play, right? Because they're not provoked into improv.
Mm.
Did you have any of that?
Yeah. From being about 14, when I started getting into jazz, I was already just, you know, I'd just jam out and write songs and.
Okay,
but I'd write
so
everything down on paper.
Problem. Now, when you were next door to the 40-year-old lady, you probably couldn't improvise.
Probably not. No, I think for them it's more of like, you know, just a hobby. Whereas for me, even from, you know, being very, very small, I knew that I wanted to be an artist and. That was what I wanted to do.
But that situation, right, it was like you had to execute the instructions, right? Those kind of situations probably couldn't improvise. But in your school, okay, after high school and that shit, do you take music to university and stuff like that?
Yeah, went through conservatoires and stuff. So I went to the Royal Welsh College of Music and then went to do a master's at Trinity Laban.
Now, at the same time, were you like, because you mentioned jazz, so were you getting schooled? Because it's hard to be taught jazz and not hear anything about improvisation, right? I don't know.
I was doing a jazz course.
Okay.
So, yeah, doing jazz trumpet degree and then went on to go do a jazz orchestral composition master's.
Oh, so improvisation was like way taught, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like to the point where you're sort of, yeah, transcribing people's solos and analysing them and learning them and just, yeah, like real kind of the real academic about it.
Yeah. But during this period, it wasn't all in the classroom. Were you in little bands on the side, like after school at nighttime?
Yeah, for sure. Before I left home, and it was like soul bands and all that kind of stuff. And then when I left and went to go study, I was doing like, yeah, going to jams. If I, you know, not that often, because I think that they can be quite male dominated, and you know, they sort of got on my nerves a bit. But I would take gigs.
You know, I remember Sly and the Family Stone. I think the trumpet person was a lady.
Mm.
In fact,
yeah.
We just lost her last year or the year before. And she was really good. Well, he had all kinds of people in his band, and he used all kinds of styles. And Sly was, you know what he said that I really dug was, he said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. And that makes a lot of sense to me because, yeah, you don't pick where you come from, but maybe if you're lucky, you got a little choice in where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that speaks to me, for sure.
Yeah. So, when you joined these soul bands, were you part of horn sections, or were you like the horn lady?
A bit of both, really. Doing pop stuff or soul stuff within a section. I would just take whatever came my way, even if it wasn't jazz. I was just eager to play.
Yeah,
I still did brass band stuff. And
soul comes from R&B, and it's got jazz in it, right? It's everything.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if someone said, "Oh, do you want to come play some trumpet at a wedding?" I'd be like, "Yeah, sure, cool."
So I'd just
do anything.
Yeah. So genre was not a big deal, right? Good.
No.
Music's music. Well, the reason why I asked about that was because I'm wondering if sometimes they had parts written for you, or you get hired on not just play the horn, but also to the right parts to go to their stuff.
A bit of both, yeah. I did a bit where someone would ask me to write horn parts, or sometimes it's like, you know, you're playing real classic soul records at a party or a wedding or something, and someone, you know, the people dancing want to hear, like, basically a replication of the record, so you're playing the trumpet part that everyone knows and can sort of sing along to. But it's a bit of both, really.
Yeah, but when I'm saying not just your trumpet part, you're writing a part for the sax, you're writing a part for the bone.
Yeah, I was writing and arranging from
that's the word, arrange. Yeah. Stupid what? Yeah, arrange.
Okay.
And what better experience but to get to do that in bands instead of just a classroom thing where you have to work the room?
I think that's the only way to really learn. You've got to hear stuff out in the open and with your ears to know if it really works.
I think that's the real practice, but I think you need the other practice too, where you're like learning stuff and you're in a room. Over here we say woodshed, like practice.
Yeah, we say in the shed as well. Yeah.
Okay. Woodshed. Yeah. It's weird. Some music people, they don't like to say, they want to use the word rehearse. They don't like this word practice. I don't know why.
I mean, semantically, it brings a different sort of energy to it. It's like if you're practicing, you're willing to make mistakes. If you're rehearsing, you're trying to get it right, I guess.
Well, like a basketball player, I've yet to hear, hey, I'm going to go out and, you know, rehearse some hoops. Okay. And practice means, you know, I don't know. It's what you do, right? I think a doctor would call his business a practice. I think the word doesn't just mean doing one part over and over. It's what you do. But the point was, yeah, doing gigs in front of people. That's the real prac. Because, you know, until you take it in front of people, right, there's no connect like there. And also the whole experience of shitting your pants because it's so scary. Being, did you ever have a problem with that? Do you remember your first public performance?
I don't remember the first one, but I don't remember ever being nervous, ever.
Wow. That's balls out. Well, you know, I got into music to be with my friends, so maybe I was not born entertainer anyway. But, man, I've always shit a peak analog every time I had to get up there, even after all this time. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 18, 2021, edition of Peter Show, special guest, Emma Jean Thackeray. Hold tight for hour two. August 18, 2021, second hour of Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Per andare al mare. y esa cerreta con el dolor en cara. Permanente me llevo dándola mis alas. Yo creía en daños, tristeza, engaños y más. Fue presentado encima de las respuestas. No veo las lágrimas. No me cuenta su adoración. Un alma que se comparte y belleza llorando. La premonición que me falle. Mi belleza se vea que mis errores valen. Una sensación ha cambiado mis palabras. Yo he tratado a pintar algunas falsas obras con decoraciones enigmadas. Oh, no veo las lágrimas. No me cuenta su adoración. Un alma que se comparte. Vive y está llorando. La premonición que me falle.
Open your mind.
It's a very mystical light, isn't it?
Yeah. It's usually, here in Pedro, it's the southwest sky. Morning star, Venus. People, we start off the second hour, Imaging Factory with Venus. And then Total from the Italian part of Switzerland with 100,000 metri. Yeah, milia. Thousand, right? Not million. Actually, England is a million's different, right? It's not a thousand million, it's a million. What we call a billion.
Exactly. Yeah, but right. I think we kind of adapt a lot of Americanism.
And don't even get me started with Fanny. No, there was a lady band in the 70s named out of the city. Midwife, brand new, Enemy. But no, with Yorando, Head Bago, DD. Here's the title. DD minus A5 plus T2 minus B4. You know how the fuck you come up with that. But, and then finally, Emma Jean Thackeray with Green Funk. So why didn't you put together your own band?
I think when I started studying jazz, when I was living in Wales, and that it was kind of expected of it, really. It's kind of expected of you to be leading your own band and writing your own stuff. And I did my own thing with some friends, and I also co-ran a jazz orchestra with some other friends as well, where I started writing. That's where I first started writing for large ensemble orchestra kind of stuff. That was kind of the beginning of that.
I noticed you use band and orchestra, so they're different things to you.
To me, no. I think to some people, yes, and I guess that's just a language thing that I've adopted in order to sort of communicate what I mean, but to me, that it's all the same.
Yeah, here we are with the practice rehearsal semantic war again.
Yeah.
Orchestra is a big band.
Pretty much.
Okay. I was just wondering why you made a difference. Because when you had your own band, you also said you helped write. So with your own band, of course, you're writing all the stuff. But with the other band, it's more of a cooperative. You're writing with other cats.
Well, I would write on my own and bring it and say, play this.
Right. Okay.
It's just not everything that we would play. It would just be by me. I'm not really that comfortable with writing with other people, I don't think, to be honest.
You mean like dreaming by committee?
Yeah, I think, you know, usually if it's my band or, you know, it's that I've said, this is it, this is how it goes, this is my vision, and
One hand on the rudder at a time.
And it's just like, this is the way I want it. I don't really want to sort of share the vision, because I think if you've got that partnership where you can do that, then that's fantastic, but I don't have that.
Right. And then when you meet somebody like you, then you accommodate them and you let them hold sway.
Yeah, exactly. If it's, I'm sort of, I like to know where I stand before. Like, is this my vision and you're helping, or is this your vision and I'm helping?
You know, that might be a shortcut on avoiding a lot of problems if you just get that out of the way at the beginning, huh?
I think so. I think communication is the most important thing, and I don't think enough people think about it enough.
Well,
really.
I think we all grow up with this idea that the band is this perfect political state, and it's just perfect, and everybody gets all their decisions lived out and compromised and organized all together, and then there's the dirt behind the daydream.
But as you said, like if you don't have that, you know, that knowledge going in, that's how the bands fall apart and things get messy.
Right. Well, you know, humans, you could take your knife and put butter on your bread, or you could stab your buddy with it. The depressing nature of choice, huh? You gave me this neat tune called Third Eye.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. want some oxygen. Now I 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 want some oxygen.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music. Now, Gene Thackeray with Third Eye. Then King Woman after that with Wrong. Al Margolis, Fluo. Victor Timofeev, Tevik Fritoyov. Yeah, I destroyed Ukrainian too, sorry. Equal Opportunity Language Record. Not on purpose, though, people. I'm just fucking incompetent. Emma Jean Thackeray finally with May There Be Peace, which is a beautiful sound. Okay, can you remember the first song you wrote?
I can, and it was terrible.
Mine too. Actually, first 100.
So, yeah, I remember the first one. I got a sort of score writing software on my computer, and my teacher was like, okay. You need to write a song, and you're going to write it into here. And I just couldn't really vibe with it. It was like I was, you know, had this like extra limb that I didn't know how to control. And then, you know, I had sort of took, you know, printed it out, gave it to a friend to play, and like, this is just nonsense.
You think it was because you were like asked to do something instead of it just coming to, you know, the muse didn't visit you, like you were asked to summon the muse?
I think I wasn't even thinking about muse. I think I was just clicking random notes and being like, is this writing music? I don't know. But when I sort of stepped back and someone said, oh no, you're just writing down in notation the songs that you would make up, like, you know, the little melodies that you write, like, oh, okay, that's composition. Okay. And then from then on, it was like, it just felt very natural and yeah, just felt like, yeah, this is what I was doing all along, except now I've got a way to write it down and show people.
So in a way, that fuck-up was really important. It was good.
Yeah, I think it was really important. Sort of showed me a way to do something.
Right, right. Now, you know this music you got coming out now. Where did you record this?
It's in a mixture of places. Most of the tracks were... The sort of bones of it were recorded somewhere in Margate by the coast. And then the rest of it is basically here in my studio where I am now. And I'm sort of overdubbing myself. There's a couple of tunes where I'm sort of playing pretty much all the instruments. And then there's a lovely sort of fantastic studio that I use sometimes. It's on a boat on the Thames called Lightship. And sort of we do boat, like the strings boat, and...
Like a boat studio.
Yeah, on like a barge.
A barge, or was it a remote recording, or is it a studio?
Yes, it's a fully functioning studio.
Wow.
And it sort of has a bit of a sway sometimes when the tide comes in. It's pretty cool. And that's where I did things like the string recordings and, you know, stuff like that. Basically, whatever I can't fit.
What's his bar studio called?
Lightship. It's called Lightship, Lightship. Formerly known as Soup, but now Lightship.
A Lightship, it's usually a mobile lighthouse here. Actually, some of them.
I think it might have. It might have one of those lights on the top. Wow. I think it does.
Because some of them were really dangerous, the ones without motors, because you couldn't get out of the way and boats ran them over. It's not fun. It's not fun. So, okay, this Woman Alone stuff, when you record, I'm interested in the process. What comes first? Because, you know, with like one-man bands like Stevie Wonder, Prince, and even Dave Grohl's first Foo Fighter album, they always started with the drums.
That's how I start, too, pretty much. Not every time. Maybe it might be like a sort of a little riff on the keyboard or something, but quite often the thing that lays down first is the drums.
Now, Imogene, are you a drummer?
I don't call myself a drummer, but I can drum.
Because these ain't programmed. This is you playing?
Some recordings, yes, it's me, but this album is Dougal Taylor, who's
fantastic drummer. Oh, okay, so there are other people on this record, okay.
Yeah, of course.
Well, not of course, because Watt's mind reading stuff ain't good enough yet, so you still got to use words. but there is some of your drumming on this, right? Or is it all Dougal?
I think with this one, I think it's almost all him. There's a bit of me, but I'm mainly doing bits of percussion and stuff.
Okay, and that's the percussion stuff is probably way at the end, right?
Yes, that's like a little sprinkle. That's the sprinkles on the cake.
With condiments. Yeah, it can be very righteous, but too much, yeah. Yeah, whew. Like that cowbell, right?
I do love a cowbell.
I got a fever in the prescription. More cowbell. Mr. Walken. I got Albert to sign the cowbell. Albert Bouchard, we played that on Don't Fear the Reaper for my buddy Larry. We're at the end of the second hour, August 18, 2021. The Dish Wap Pedro Show special guest, Imogene Thackeray. Hold tight for hour three. August 18, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
The world.
Show start off the third hour. Emma Jean Thackeray with Sun. Getting a little too Hollywood or Barcelona. Carl 2000 after that with spelled chocolate with an X. How do you pronounce that? Chocolate. Yeah, chocolate. Wonderful. Wonderful. Babes New York City after that. Babes New York City. What a name for a band. Babes in Chumpland. Have a Nice Life from the Big Gloom. I just thought that was insane. Derek Moneypenny with Nastalik. And then Golden Green, Emma Jean Thackeray. These titles, they're always very simple. They come first or last, or in the middle, or where?
Probably at the end, actually, yeah. Probably last, mostly.
Yeah, I ask that because I always have to start with the title. Nobody does that. But I ask anyway. So, and you know, what about, you know, especially with instrumental music stuff, titles, with the classical world, they're numbers and stuff, right? Like your catalog of your works and stuff.
But yeah, or Anthony Braxton or someone like that, where it's like, it looks like an algebra.
Right. So, How does titles fit into your world? Is it really minor or what? I mean, because obviously it's for the listener, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think maybe they didn't used to be as important as they are now. Now I kind of know that that's something that people can sort of grab onto. It's something a bit more visceral. You know, if you're sort of saying, "Oh, have you heard that new song X3729LT4?" Then it's not quite as catchy, is it? If you say, "Oh, but if you heard Golden Green," it's like,
yeah.
"Oh yeah, that song." It brings up the image for people,
right? Like, there's a documentary where Elvin Jones is talking about how when he plays drums, he's seeing colors, and like the cymbals, certain color, the snare drum, you know, the toms. And in fact, there's some kind of ailment, well, maybe not an ailment, maybe a gift where people actually hear music in colors. I don't know what
it's called. Synesthesia, yeah.
You know the name for this?
Yeah, synesthesia. It's synesthesia, like where your senses are. You've got cross wires.
Wow. Do you think you got it?
I do sometimes wonder because I can sort of see or hear or, you know, things that maybe shouldn't, but it's, I mean, I've spoken to some people who've got it very intensely, and it's a whole other level to what I have. Is, you know, even if I do, which I'm not sure I do, but I know someone who can taste things when they hear things. So,
wow,
can get very intense.
What of it that you do have? Do you use that as a resource for your composition?
Yeah, for me, it's probably just like a strong associations that are just deeply ingrained. Rather than a sort of sensory.
And speaking of resources for composition, do you carry around a little book of lyrics or a little book of manuscript of written down music or a little? Do you use a voice memo on your leash, like hum little melodies?
I've always got a manuscript book. Yeah, I always sort of write stuff down if I've got a little idea of a riff or something.
So when it comes to composing, you can go back and see this whole like reservoir.
Yeah, and I don't need an instrument to compose either. I can sort of do it in my head and hear the pitches and everything. So You know what? Lucky I can do that.
No, that was a big breakthrough for me when I learned how to do that, how not to have the fucking bass in my hand and actually do it in my head. Yeah, my first opera in 95 when I wrote that thing, 96. The idea, because if you're writing on the machine, you're limited to where you keep doing the same things over, right? The shtick.
Exactly. You've got these habits that you have that you keep regurgitating, and it's nice to step away from that.
Where if it's in the theater of the mind or something, right, maybe a little more free or loose.
Yeah. I always do this thing where I write music down, and then when it comes to actually me playing it, I'm like, oh, this is really hard.
Why did I do that?
Because
you didn't engineer it to the machine. Yeah. But it was free of that constraint or constriction, and then maybe you have to develop a technique to, like, enable that. So maybe that's better to go than reductionist thing in the beginning. See, I think that's what I was doing. I was, you know, you can only write what you already know. No, you should be able to think music, I think, maybe, and then try to make that. I don't know. Maybe I'm an idealist. I want to play.
No, I agree with you. I agree.
Oh, you're very kind. I want to play Spectre.
There's a specter in my house. He doesn't see me. There's a specter in my house, but he doesn't see me. He doesn't see me. There's a specter in my house. He walks right through me. There's a specter in my house, but he walks right through me.
Thank you.
spot for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Imogene Thackeray with Spectre. And then we had part three of three, the Tricephalus Project. This is a Heck Pizzicato from Berlin. Alex and Danielle with their buddy from, God, I can't remember his name, from Ireland. They did a three-way. And 1-9-1-2-3-0, I bet you it's 1912-30. I bet you it's a date. The day before the last day. Or they say the day before tomorrow is the best, right? No, that was Watt. Sorry. And then finally, Imogene Thackeray with Rahu and Ketu. I'm mystified. What's that?
So it's, throughout the whole record, is quite a lot of, like, astrological sort of leanings and, you know, a lot of Vedic astrology and thinking about the cosmos and all that.
Okay.
So this is about, like, the nodes of the moon.
Yeah,
Rahu and Ketu.
Of course, what? Fuck.
Oh, no, it's also a really cool sort of myth, like a sort of Hindu myth as well.
Yeah, but as a unifying, you know, in a way, the album's got a spine. It's got a backbone. It's got something uniting the pieces.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, there's definitely, like, yeah, common themes and...
What I mean, it's not just a collection of tunes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like I've done some of those, and I even call them operas and shit because they got beginning, middle, ends. But I couldn't fit it all in one little tune, so I had to use one tune with a lot of parts. And so, in the theme here is space, extraterrestrial.
In which theme? Sorry.
Of your album here.
It's the astrological stuff is more of like an expression of the deeper lying theme for me, which is about, you know, universal consciousness and oneness.
Consciousness, okay.
Yeah, so that's, you know, not to sort of get too hippie, but, like, yeah, just feeling that oneness from person to person or person to tree to animal, us all being made of the same shit. We're all coming from the same place. We're all one big thing made of love, essentially. And I think the astrological kind of sense is a way of me expressing that, like, look, there's something bigger than all of us.
Well, I was just going to say, the space thing is a humilifier. You know, trying to bring humility to the tininess, right? If you look at the bigness. Yeah. And it's something I think the human species could do with a little more.
Humility, for sure.
Yeah. So if you're talking about that, I can relate totally. Okay. And then, you know, because the other thing, right, about the conscious that we all share, and we're all here kind of learn about it. Do you believe that school was just when you were getting that degree or learning the cornet, or maybe as long as you're alive, you're still in the classroom?
I definitely feel like that. I feel like if, you know, every day should be learning, and, you know, I'll be learning until my last hour on the planet, I think. And when I hear people, like my grandma, for instance, who, you know, I'm very lucky, my grandparents are with me still, and, you know, she always wanted to learn the keyboard, and I said, I'll teach you, and I've been saying this for years, like, I'll teach you. And she'd say, no, I'm too old to learn something new. And it's like, she's been saying that every year for, like, 20 years. So, you know, it's like, well, maybe, I don't know, it's like, If you felt too old then, like, do you feel too old now? Like, maybe you realized back then you weren't too old, if there is such a thing. And, you know, I just find that mindset, that limiting mindset to be, you know, it's a real shame.
You mean you can't break through and she can be your student?
I've tried. I've offered it to her as birthday presents and all sorts. And she's
besides your old aunt, is that the one who took you to the gig?
No, my aunt is, someone else.
Oh, you're talking about your grandma. I'm sorry, I confused the relatives. Idiot-wise. Sorry, yeah. Do you have students, though?
Not anymore. I did used to. I used to do a lot of teaching, particularly in, like, inner-city London schools, sort of, like, you know, areas where there's not a lot of stuff going on for kids, not a lot of
I know it sounds trippy, but do you think it helps you be a better student by being a teacher?
I think so. I think it makes you a better everything.
Yeah.
You know, teaching kids for me is like, you know, if I can stand up in front of 57-year-olds armed with instruments. I can stand up on a stage and, you know, sing to anyone.
That was great. That was very inspiring. Where can people find you on the internet?
Social media, on my own website, on YouTube. Just
What is your own website URL, Emma Jean?
EmmaJeanSakray.com. So that's Thackeray spot, T-H-A-C-K-R-A-Y.com. And you can get anywhere from that place.
Okay. Thank you so much. And when you come up with some new music, please come back on the show.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, thank you so much for your time. Thanks
for having me. Absolutely. People, August 18, 2021 edition of YP Rush. Keep your powder dry.